Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. Excited about the show.
Hey, this is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to catch up with the grand poobah that got us running things over there at Green Worldwide Transportation, none other than Larry Green. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce, and this guy is no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone either, so I should say reintroduce to our listening audience, partner with 151 Advisors. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Steve Brummer. How are you, man?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me again.
151 Advisors, what are you guys doing for folks?
We are helping them with their go-to-market strategies around the world for entering into the IoT, M2M, wireless, mobile, telecom businesses.
The IoT, Internet of Things, that is a phrase that bouncing around this every business blog. That's the place to be, right?
It seems to be working for us.
Can you share a little bit about that, maybe how it came to be, the Internet of Things?
Actually, it's an old market.
Steve and Al Gore were sitting together and they started kicking the idea around.
Al said, yeah. Steve said Internet of Things.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, you know what, that I've used that line so many times, Stone, I can't even begin to tell you. The Internet of Things used to be called machine to machine. Mm-hmm. And so when we go back 15, 17 years, it was the idea of connecting a machine to talk to another machine. And thank you for our friends at Cisco who changed it to the Internet of Everything, and then it became Internet of Things.
Right.
It's still functionally the same thing. It is connecting things, whether they be in devices, in connected cars, in buildings, things to the internet, wirelessly or wired. So that's the broader definition. People are using it around the world for so many different aspects, from asset tracking to monitoring of elevators and lights and switches and sensors and IP cameras. The amount of information and the amount of products that are available now classified as the Internet of Things just continues to explode. And that's a good thing for people like us at 151 Advisors who there's so many people that are trying to figure it out. And when there's that lack of knowledge and a lack of education, a company like ours helps them gear towards figuring out how to make money in this space. You can come out with a product, but you better figure out who's going to buy it, what problem it's going to solve, and how are you going to be able to implement. And those are the key aspects of what we focus on.
Now, can you share a little bit about when it first started, when it was machine to machine, what was some of the functionality that people were high-fiving over at the beginning stages?
It was really remote monitoring and asset tracking. So the basics of trying to figure out how an oil well was working or a remote gas meter.
So some guy was in his condo in New York and go, look at my oil well, right? And they're like, this is the coolest
wrong
thing.
Wrong state. No, and actually Coca-Cola here in Atlanta was an innovator. We were a long time ago, we're having discussions with them when they were first putting in a wireless modem into a Coke machine. Uh-huh. And those Coke machines were being monitored then to be able to look at refrigeration temperatures, how many coins were in the slot, what the inventory of a particular Coke model was in that box.
So they can say, oh, we're out of Sprite, or we're going to be
out of Sprite. That's correct. And if you could reduce, in the beginning, the ROI, the return on investment for M2M was, if I could reduce sending a Coca-Cola field service technician to a machine one time a month, it surely paid for itself.
Right, because there was no need to refill this one.
Correct, exactly. Or if something happened overnight, or you know, there was a run on it in the Coke machine that was in the lobby of the hotel, they would be able to replenish it adequately and efficiently. And so increasing that productivity and had the ROI right there. Today, it's different. I mean, your car is an Internet of Things, right?
So you have a lot of cars are now Wi-Fi enabled.
That's exactly right. So you have a 4G module in there, and you got companies like AT&T here locally, you know, where, you know,
they want to put it everywhere.
Well, you know, and Glenn Laurie and the team, Chris Benrose and those guys, they're putting on 1 million cars a quarter onto their network.
That are Wi-Fi enabled.
That are 4G enabled, mm-hmm. and let alone what everything else.
So that's going to be the norm going forward then. I mean, that's not going to be the anomaly to be Wi-Fi.
To have internet
absolutely.
In your car.
Absolutely. Because there's so much more information that you're wanting. Your children in the back seat wanting more infotainment. You're wanting more information about what's going on in there. And you don't necessarily want to use your smartphone for that. You want to be able to use the console in the car to be able to provide you with that information.
You hearing this, Larry? We want this in our limos too, you understand?
We're up to date on our Wi-Fi.
All right, okay.
and if you look at how car dealers and you and I are wanting to know about maintenance of vehicles,
right.
You know, when something goes wrong, mm-hmm. I want to be able to know, and I want to know when my child is in the car. Forget just GPS and tracking of your vehicles. Let's take it the next step and saying, how much money can I save? What can I do to be the information from that car or that truck or that limo back to us is going to save us more money, less miles, less wear and tear, better maintenance. Those are huge things.
Because right now, even in a car situation, if you go to get your car fixed, they're going to do diagnostics.
Absolutely.
So why couldn't the consumer know what those diagnostics are?
Right, and it's available today. I mean, you have a bus, an ODB port
right.
that's underneath there. If you know what you're talking
right.
about and you know what you do. And now there are companies, forget the progressive insurance devices
right.
type of thing that the insurance companies are using. Again, another Internet of Things, taking that information, sending it over to the internet, evaluating it. But now there are companies like Mojio that have a 4G module built into the ODB port adapter with Wi-Fi in it. So you don't have to retrofit your car. You can actually
nice.
Do it that way. So there's more and more products that are coming. And I know we're going to get into this, but I just got back from 2 weeks in China. They're light years ahead of us.
Really?
Oh my gosh, yes. They're looking at an explosive amount of Internet of Things between the cameras, controlling traffic, controlling building automation, everything that you can imagine.
So from an infrastructure standpoint, they're way ahead of us.
They're going to be way ahead of us as far as employing 5G. I know. Come on. Tell me what that means.
Well, it's time for 5G.
What does 5G mean?
But I got to tell you, I thought you were going to tell us that you were kind of over there getting other countries up to speed. But these folks are ahead of us.
Absolutely. They are way ahead of us.
So what makes America behind the curve when it comes to the Internet of Things?
It's
our wireless.
No, it's not
Wi-Fi?
It's not the infrastructure at all. I think we have far in advance the technology to be able to do that. It's going to be several things, and it's my pet peeves. One is the lack of education. So I am going to take this Internet of Things, but I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Today, the statistics are less than 45% of companies that deploy IoT. Actually use the data for something important. And so there's a lack of education.
So they're like, oh, I'm collecting data. That's important.
Okay,
and they're just sitting
what?
In a
That's right.
In
what
closet.
Am I doing? Right. What am I going to do with that data
right.
in the cloud?
right.
So
it's on the cloud.
It's,
so I'm good.
It's okay. I know it's there, but right. I don't know what to do with it. And so I think there's this lack of education as to what the benefits are, how you use it, how much it costs, how hard it is, or how easy it is to deploy. We also have a problem with the integration and deployment of it. Who's going to do that for you? Is it going to be AT&T? Is it going to be your local VAR and systems integrator? Are you going to try and do it yourself?
Who does it now in corporations? The CIO? Is
all
that
over
the CIO's
exactly.
problem?
It's usually the IT department who's trying to figure it out in a corporation. But as we start to look at building automation, you know, Schneider Electrics and the Otis elevators and the Honeywells who have the alarm and fire alarm systems, they are now hugely into IoT because it's easier
that
for them
makes sense.
To start to try and develop that.
Right.
So that's the second thing is education. And then we have a big security challenge. Some countries don't care.
They care less.
Was that politically correct? Some countries don't care, but we are going to. And in my speech last week in China about smart cities, one of the things that I really stressed on the security aspect was we are one target breach away in IoT before we really figure out that security has to be addressed on a day in, day out basis, meaning that Now we can all go into our cards and we have chips on our debit cards and our credit cards. Well, we didn't have that before the Target breach.
Right.
It's something that's a cause and effect. If you look at all of us that have Nest thermostats, and this is my crazy example, and it's been done before, but you know, hackers can think about them getting into all of the Nest thermostats around the world.
I don't want to.
And now you walk home, you get in a home, and every home around the world who has a Nest is at 110 degrees or something like that. Right. And so that's the hack that happens that turns around and says, oh.
But that could like trigger something that makes the power grid explode, right? Because everybody's using.
That's you saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm like,
right? But isn't that a ramification? If everybody had Nest and then it ever goes up, then all of a sudden you have such demand on the grid.
Yep. And that's also the same thing is that you can imagine all the smart cameras and all the smart lighting and all the other things that are out there and all that gets hacked and what can happen there. Right. Because where are all those smart things in your home going through?
They're going through your
that one internet. Little black your box router. In my right. office.
Your router, right. Exactly. And do you think your router is secure?
Absolutely.
Have I got a bridge to sell you? Do you have investment money for that? It's not. And I think that's where we're starting to move into secure gateways, not only having the router, but a secure gateway that then is the place that everything goes into. So it has the ability to install security in it. And we're spending a lot of time at 151 on that aspect of it. So I think those are some of the things that are not allowing IoT in the U.S. to continue to grow or explode like it is in other areas.
So in the other countries, they're more trusting of the situation or there's less regulation?
There's definitely less regulation. We do have a standards issue right now where we don't know what to do with standards. And so I think that's going to help grow the business. But an area like China, not only because of the massive amount of people, but the massive amount of brand new cities, brand new construction, brand new things where they have the ability to build it into the new build,
right,
where we have to retrofit. So if we wanted to do this building, we would have to add to the infrastructure within this building in order to make us be able to have sensors and light sensors and heat sensors and everything else that's there. There, it's brand new. So their smart cities, and that's a whole different subject, but their intelligent cities that they're building, they have a lot more advanced. We are less than 20 smart cities in the United States where you can actually look at controlling an entire city. So they're a lot farther ahead of us. India is going to be farther ahead of us.
Anybody who's investing in infrastructure and these kind of, instead of retrofitting, they're going
right.
to have an advantage in this area.
Right. I had a woman on my panel at Smart Cities in Shanghai that has a city outside of Taipei in Taiwan. They are doing things around local advertising. So you as a citizen have an app that knows in Sandy Springs what the traffic is, what the temperature is, whether there's a tornado warning, what your restaurants are, coupons coming in. But it also, they are a low-lying area close to the sea, and they've had some problems with typhoons. They also have a water warning system built into their sensors that are into their program that on your app you can actually get. So there are cities that are looking for new creative ways besides traffic. Traffic is the number one reason to build a successful smart cities IoT project. Mm-hmm. We want to know what's going on 400.
So that's the low hanging fruit, everybody can get behind.
That's right. It's Waze on steroids. Right. I now know everything about what's going on that highway, what the speeds are, what the conditions are, and everything else. And I think if you look at Atlanta, I think all of us in this room, especially you, Harry, would want to be able to just reduce the amount of traffic. And if you did have the right systems in place, the Internet of Things being able to drive the sensors and the systems to be able to provide that information back, not necessarily to GDOT, but to you and your system, Larry, to be able to look at that, that's a huge benefit. And you're willing to pay for that. So you start to look at smart cities initiatives. Traffic and transportation are really key.
But even a slam dunk application like that seems to make all the sense in the world, or something really sexy that I found real attractive on a TV commercial the other day was the refrigerator that kind of let you know what was in there. what your firm is doing, your practitioners are going in there and helping them with structure, rigor, discipline to think through how we're going to bring this to market deliver the value. Because if you just jump off the deep end and show them your pretty thing, then there are consequences, many of them unintended, that you don't want to live through. Yeah.
Yeah. We like finding geeks who can't sell well.
That's your target market.
That's my target market. So they've created something that's outrageously disruptive, technology that you think is really cool, but they haven't figured out just how it's going to be sold, or where it's going to be sold, or who's going to buy it, or what, you know, what. It's amazing how many times people in those creative positions, technologists especially, have built something and thinking they will come. And
it's like the better mousetrap.
Yeah. And you go, okay, well, where am I going to go? You're not all going to get into Best Buy. You're not all going to get into Costco. You're not all going to get on Amazon to be on the top.
You're talking
page.
About a consumer product.
Or a B2B product. Right. So how does a B2B product get out to the marketplace? Are you going to go through distribution and resellers and channels? Are you going to sell direct? All those things need to get figured out, the support mechanisms, the branding of it. It's amazing how many companies have taken investment money to build something, but haven't taken the time to understand how much money it's going to take to market and brand the product. Yeah.
Can you share an example of somebody that maybe you thought had a great idea, but they didn't go to market in the best way?
You don't have to name names.
Thank gosh.
But just kind of walk us through.
You know, somebody who chose not to work with you guys.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Who in the world would not That's want to work framing. With us? There are a couple of companies. I'll give you a prime example. So there was a company that had built a couple of IoT products, and they felt that they could bring it to the specific vertical market, and they would just like,
Just show them, and everybody would buy it.
Right. And they ended up going to CES.
Right. That's a big consumer electronics show.
Spending, I got to remember these radio things. They went up and spent $100,000 for the show. Then they between the booth and the expenses of everything of coming international to Las Vegas, thinking show. That everybody would that they would end up
can't
with,
wait right, making right, up in orders
right and then right. They get there and they realize that they're one of 500 companies that are in the same vertical market segment selling the same
and they're
stuff.
Probably in the same area of the
that's,
show
that's exactly right, right. Well right next you to don't other. Want to be in you don't want to be a Chinese company going into the China China pavilion, which has got rows and rows and rows and rows of e-cigarettes you know, or something like that. But you end up and you go talk to them and you sit there and go, so what's your go-to-market strategy?
Right.
Oh, we're here at the show and we're going to show everybody our stuff.
It's my sign-up sheet. That's my go-to-market strategy.
Oh, give me your business card and I'll contact you. And I think some of the times you start to realize that those strategies, I mean, if I were able to take that $100,000, what I could do with that and being able to bring it to market, get it into the right branding mechanisms, try and find the right resellers, because obviously going through resellers and channels is a better cost-effective model for somebody who doesn't have the big bucks to go after the branding in a retail or a big commercial scenario. And we try and figure out who is going to be able to partner with you.
Right, like forming the right partnerships and alliances.
That's exactly
and
right.
And is that something that your firm helps companies
Absolutely.
With?
Yeah, we're very good at trying to figure out that strategy and then execute on that strategy. A lot of companies like us build the strategy, but they walk away and expecting you to figure it out. We have found that if we are not directly involved in the execution of the strategies, then we have a bad reputation. And
right, you know, like you take the hit for it, right?
Yeah, they're blaming it on us after, right. You know, when their execution piece is not working.
Right, because
really
sometimes you need help, sometimes you need a helper.
That's right. That's right. I was on the phone today with a company in Brussels. The same thing. They're very successful direct selling, and they're very successful in Europe in the telecom space. And I'm sitting on the phone with the CCO describing what we do. And the biggest thing I could explain to, and one thing that we do take an advantage of, is we act like our clients. So we take on their persona with email addresses, branding, and everything else associated with it. So he was trying to understand, so you're us? Yes, we are an outsourced service for you to go to the channel partners and develop a channel partner program without the expense of having to do that, setting up your own people and hiring your own people. And you're over in Brussels. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to bring a couple of people over to Atlanta. How much does that cost to do that? And so we become a cost-effective way for international companies wanting to come to North America.
And you have offices around the globe.
Yeah, we Brussels is handled by our UK office, and we have an office in Istanbul. And after spending many weeks in China, we got to have something in Asia soon. And, that'll be a discussion for the partners and me next week.
We'll so the whole sales and marketing thing for you guys, is the phone ringing off the hook, or are you out there going after specific
customers? He just talks, does speeches.
Well, I think exactly he can walk the red carpet at these shows, right?
Well,
that's fish in a barrel.
Yeah, I mean, like next week we'll be in Las Vegas for the IoT Evolution show, and I have several speaking roles there.
Right, you don't have a booth. You just do speaking, right?
Yeah. I mean, what would I say in a booth?
Right.
Give me your money. I mean, what would I do? And we do that, and we do a lot of outreach and partnerships. So we'll be at Cisco Live next week also, which is a show in San Francisco, and then in Las Vegas. And then after that, AT&T has got their developer program at AT&T Park, Park in San Francisco, where we'll be participating also. So it is an outreach. It is partnerships. It is the ecosystems within the wireless mobile space and telecom space that needs to know who we are and what we do. Because since we are different, we seem to be getting a lot more publicity and who we are associating with.
I want to go to these trade shows. I want to interview the really smart geeks that don't know how to sell, and then like help them talk about their stuff. And then I want to give them all to Steve so he can really help them.
Well, we also have a 10% referral fee, Stone, if that's what you're looking
for. We can set up like a whole business,
right? You know what?
Because they're going to want to talk about their stuff.
Why do you think I keep coming back to the show?
I like it.
I'm interested now, too.
See? We're always looking for new income.
There you go.
So now you're seeing a lot of investment and funding in this area?
Yeah, the funding is interesting. Yes, we are. And I think it's because it is so hot, right? So we're always running these waves of investments into certain areas, and IoT is huge. The investors that are putting it are looking into specific vertical market segments where people are really going to be looking at long term what the viable product is in the IoT space. And we're seeing huge plays on software, applications, all within that space. Hardware is hardware, hard thing to invest in it. But if you got something with a recurring revenue and it's actually producing enough productivity gains and efficiency gains that there is something sizable behind it, then the investments are there.
Now, are the VCs using you to help kind of vet and
correct.
So you're working with VCs as well?
That's right. We're working with VCs and private equity firms that are looking to do due diligence. A lot of times there's separate groups that are vetting the technology. We're vetting the go-to-market. You know, how are you going to make money? How are you going to figure out, you know, who's going to be able to help you sell the products?
So you're working both sides of the deal, man.
Yes, correct. So VCs have...
It's more noble than it sounds.
Right. I was trying to be. Yes, that's correct. So we can do the due diligence on the back end before the investment. And then
you go, hey, that's a good one. I think we can help these guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we always throw those little hooks in there. So, and then we do get hired by VCs after the fact that have invested in companies.
To fix them.
To take the geeks to a new level of selling. There's no shortage of that.
Right. So what's next for you guys?
Continue growth into the IoT M2M space on a worldwide basis. Looking at Asia, it's an amazing amount of money there of companies that are realizing that America's streets are still paved with gold and they need to be here as the yen continues to fall. And you have the European issues that are going on with Brexit. But I think from our standpoint, our expansion has got to continue to be finding the technologists that are out there that are building something disruptive and helping them trying to figure out how to make money. We continue to find new innovative ways to make money, but these guys are not.
Are you having a hard time finding additional partners and advisors?
Great question. Yes and no. From an advisor standpoint, you have to understand the ecosystem. And we're finding that there's a lot of, there's a lack of knowledge again, right? So how do you get trained on this stuff? You know, how do you know what's going on? So we're doing that, But we're finding a lot of under 30 millennials that are understanding this business very well because they're using the technology more than
we are.
They're
growing up with
more than the more than the guys in the room are. And so that's helping us on the business development and marketing.
So you're having programs. To grow your own?
We like that better, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to be, because we're going to install them into places that they would never have gone in on their own. We are also trying to find ways to expand our business through ecosystem people. So we partner with a lot of companies to be able to go in there, because if you are in the wireless space, there's a modem inside, right? There's a radio frequency modem. We need to partner with those radio frequency modem guys who are selling products, who's selling modems into boxes, and those box guys need to sell their boxes somehow. So we continue to find ways to build that ecosystem up.
Good.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
Oh, is this the hook at the end?
This is the end.
You can go to 151advisors.com and to find out more information about us. You know, we're growing in leaps and bounds. Happy to be here, and thank you very much.
And what's the pain point a company's having that they know that maybe we should call Steve and his group?
You've developed something really cool and just don't have an idea of how you're going to make the
money.
Maybe
the traction that you thought you were going to get.
Right. I mean, you know, and again, there's, you know, guys at ATDC, there's, you know, there's people in town. It's amazing. I don't do a lot of business in town, but, you know, from an overall standpoint, that there are those kinds of people that are trying to figure that out.
Right.
And it's not really the end, because we're going to leave your microphone open. Yay. But I'm hoping you can hang out with us while we visit with our next guest.
I can't wait to hear more from Larry.
Fantastic. Larry has great stories.
So he does have great stories. Well, can you imagine? Well, you've seen some of these shows on HBO where they have the people in the back seat and they videotape them. I don't know if Larry's in that business or not.
Is this Taxi Confession? Yes. Is that what we're doing now?
Well, you know, with the Internet of Things, there could be some synergies.
Larry, we can put cameras in the back of those limos if you like.
We may already have one.
All right. In lieu of that intro, let me see if I can do one that's a little more formal and standard. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast and welcoming back to our studio our good friend with Green Worldwide Transportation, Mr. Larry Green. Did you learn anything in that segment, Larry?
You know, following behind Steve is going to be tough.
It's a tough act. That's why we left his mic open. You know,
I'm hoping no one goes to sleep on my segment part of this. But I do feel like I've kind of just finished off an episode of Shark Tank. But no, I learned
a lot.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm out.
Steve, that was actually very informative. And it's funny because we do integrate a lot of the technology that Steve was talking about. From the GPSs to the Wi-Fis and all the vehicles to what we're going to have soon, actually, which is on the way, the application where people are going to be able to actually go on and see where their car is.
Nice.
I know you know the Uber.
We don't use the Uber.
Well, don't.
don't.
Not during this segment.
Oh. Yeah. Well,
we're exclusive Green Worldwide Transportation.
That's right.
They have their hands full anyway. Yeah. But nonetheless, the technology of knowing where your car is and you being able to see it is certainly, you know, very well thought of by the community, because people, you know, especially a lot of these groups coming in who have to or want to call us to find out where everything is and what's going on, don't have to do that anymore. So as we can trim down manpower also and turn over technology, that helps us too.
So now you guys have been in business for how long? 20, 30 years now?
You know, we are in our 29th year.
Wow. So this city has changed quite a bit.
You look really good for 29 years in business, I got to say.
Listen, we started when I was 4, and child prodigy, I'm sure. But
he's giving rides on your big wheel.
That's right. I was going to say, in your big wheels.
Thanks, Stone. I'm glad they can't see me. It's been a good road, and we've been lucky enough to survive all the down, you know, times, and, you know, 08, 09 and everything else. And luckily, you know, it's all part of just having good people and a solid, I think, business, you know, model.
And I think the people who live in Atlanta don't realize how much Atlanta is a destination for a lot of people come here for vacations and day trips and activities here, right?
Atlanta is huge. I grew up here. You know, I'm a native, I'll admit it. And when I grew up here in the 60s, 70s, what year were it? There was only 500,000 people in Atlanta.
Wow.
Lenox was a strip shopping center. And obviously the city had just gone, you know, monstrous. 6.5 million people, I guess we have now. So with that said, traffic, obviously, as we talk about being the one thing that is probably the biggest thorn in anyone's side, it's traffic. So we, you know, we've had to deal with all the changes in Atlanta, just like anyone else, but we just have to be smarter and technology helps us.
So now how have you seen, in terms of the hotels and the, you know, the Congress Center is changing and now there's a new stadium, all of that, kind of activity, isn't that just play into your business? Those are all opportunities, right?
Absolutely. Atlanta has had so much growth in so many different areas. Now, the new Falcons Stadium, which is about a, you know, putt from the old one.
Right. So are they both going to be here simultaneously?
I think they're tearing down.
For a one-year period of time, yeah. And then they're going to make it a parking garage.
And that'll be the parking garage for the new stadium?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they need that, especially if you've ever paid $50 park across the street from the old. But the Brave Stadium is huge, you know, coming up into the corridor of, you know, 285 right. and 75. And that is big for us too, because the sport, you know, sports are big. We do a lot of to and from games, mainly because people don't like the traffic and don't want to drive.
Yeah, I got to believe where the new stadium, Brave Stadium is, that's going to be a boom for you because there's no mass transit and there's everything, you know.
Absolutely, except for my drive home. On those days.
Well, now, your business, is it a Yellow Page business, or I guess this day and age, you know, an internet business where that's how people find you and choose what service they're going to use, or how are people finding you?
Interestingly enough, the internet is always the biggest avenue if you're, say, social media-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, Facebooks and LinkedIn and Twitters and whatnot. But, you know, truthfully, that's not where our business comes from so much. It's word of mouth. And you find that, and this goes for any business, and Steve's business, anyone, customer is happy, or, you know, they know someone who is in, is what they need, or someone else they know, they recommend them. So the referral business is bigger than even the internet business.
So when you say referral, like, is that business executives that use you, or people in hotels, like who?
Everything. It's so if we
work concierges in hotels,
absolutely. We are fortunate enough to work with a lot of the major hotels in Atlanta as their provider, and yes, so because they have their trust with you, they will recommend it because you're really an extension of them anyway at that point. So we feel like as a partner. We've been working with the Ritz-Carlton, for instance, both of them for the last 25 years. And you know, I'm happy to say that obviously if there was some shortage or some problem somewhere along the way, they would have to make a choice. And, you know, luckily enough, we've still been their provider. So our model is that, you know, we always want to take care of the customers we have. And with the referrals, hotels, it could be from, you know, we're the affiliate for probably 200 or 300 other companies like us around the world, and their clients are coming to Atlanta.
Oh, that's nice.
And we do the same. Our clients who are traveling around the world, we have an affiliate network that we use someone if it's going to China, if it's going to London, wherever it happens to be. But then you find executive assistants, concierges. It could be, you know, just a business person traveling within an organization who gets referred to us.
And how about meeting planners? I bet you're in good with them, yeah?
They're some of my favorite people in the world.
But no, I mean, if you're putting on a big event, if we did a big thing for Business Radio X and had guests and hosts and all that, you don't want to leave that aspect of things to chance. You want to work with someone that you trust, and certainly after you've used them once.
Absolutely. I actually, you know, part-time job is I actually teach part of an event planning class at Kennesaw State.
Professor Leary, I did not know that.
For probably about the last 8 years.
Wow.
So I teach exactly what you're saying is that, you know, when they go out into the real world or they're working with someone, they need to trust who they're using because it's a reflection of them.
Oh, yeah.
If something horribly goes wrong with transportation for the CEO of X, you know, company, you know, who ends up on the chopping block? The person who arranged it. So they have to, they're putting a lot of faith in you. And if you let them down, it could be their job too. So we're only as good as the last run we do for somebody. You know, we really never take it for granted. And we have to reinvent ourselves every single time that door opens. You know, and especially with groups, you know, when you get 200-300 people coming at the airport, we're the first people they see and the last people they see. So we have to make sure that that's a good impression.
So now are you, are things looking up? Is the economy turned around where you're bullish about things now? Or
absolutely. You know, during the drop in the economy, we had to get smarter. You know, we were all kind of, you know, we used the term fat, dumb, and happy, you know, and you could send anything wherever and money was just coming in the door. And then, you know, when the bust took place, you really had to be careful about how we use our resources. So we got smarter and more profitable with less equipment. And we found out we could do as much business with lesser equipment as we could with more, just by better dispatching. You know, someone goes in the airport, they're going to come out with somebody, and not have people crisscross. Technology helps us a lot. Tells us where all the vehicles are. We know on GPS, on right in our office, where every single vehicle is, so that efficiently we can time out, you know, who the next customer, that car is going where. And even our computer will tell us.
Well, I can tell you, I think, and I don't know, I'm not terribly well-traveled. I've gotten to do a little travel on IBM's Nickel because my wife has been a consultant and sometimes had some global assignments. But I would think if I traveled like a Steve and I were a green customer here, you know, and use it, it would be very comforting to me that I don't have to try to figure out or even ask my exec assistant to figure out transportation in Shanghai and Paris and London. So they a client can communicate with you and you can help them organize stuff on the other end?
Absolutely. We call it one-stop shopping. Basically, it's easier for you too. If we already have a profile, all the form of payments, whatever, whether it's billing, credit cards, whatever, once.
I don't want to fool with any of that stuff. Larry's got
you travel to whatever city you're going. All you want to know is there's a car waiting for you. It delivers you to where you're going.
Right.
And you're done. There's no paperwork. There's no anything.
All right. But to make all that really work consistently over time, you've got to have great people. It's recruiting, retention, development. Can you just speak to that? Because obviously you've kind of cracked the code for that over the last 29 years. And that's something some of us struggle with, I got to tell you.
You know, and you're absolutely right, because you can't build a company if you don't have good people. And that is the recipe. If you have well-trained people, and as we said earlier, as Steve did, if they're not well-trained and don't know what to do, it's not doing anyone any good, not the customer nor you. So having good people certainly makes it work. Starting with our reservationists, starting with our groups department, our dispatchers, everyone's cross-trained to be able to handle anything 24 hours a day. We have someone in the office who can literally make changes, take new reservations, make sure where the vehicles are, make sure drivers are where they're supposed to be. And, you know, to help out too, we run 24-hour shifts, meaning we have drivers that come in, you know, in the morning at 3 a.m. and maybe work till noon.
I guess it didn't occur to me that you run a 24/7, 365 business, don't you?
We have drivers who come in at 11 o'clock at night and work till 8 in the morning. So we are around the clock, and you'd be surprised how many people, especially with the like West Coast, the music industry, and now in a very large way, the movie industry.
Right, the film industry must have changed your business, right? There's a lot more of that activity.
That was probably, if you're going to ask me, one single game changer, it would be the movie industry.
And you had to train your guy. You had to train your drivers not to give them their headshot, right?
We did.
Here's my screenplay.
And I don't think we've lost anyone to, you know, celebrity acting, but you know, so we send the least attractive, but the and not to mention discretion. You know,
right.
we certainly have to be very discreet because we do have celebrities in the vehicles daily. And whether it's producers or we're taking groups around for site selections or
radio hosts. I mean, important people are in these cars.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I can, I tell you, I probably know a year in advance on movies.
Wow.
Before you will. I know their names. I know who's in them. And it's funny when I actually see one on, you know, TV or the theater and I go, and I look at the credits, I go, I know them, you know, and that was like a year ago, you know, when they finally brought it to the screen. But there is probably about 25 to 30 movies being made on any given day in this city.
Wow.
And or the state even. It's huge. It's a great, studios are popping up everywhere. Huge. It was like, you know, all the Avenger movies are made down at Pinewood Studios on the south side of Atlanta.
Right. That's something not everybody realizes, that how many sound stages they have, like 10 or 11 sound stages south of the city.
They are building them
and they just can't build them fast enough.
Mm-hmm. A lot in the Lakewood area, free, you know, they put studios over there. There's some in town. I mean, they can't build them fast enough to handle the traffic, you know, and the amount of movies. And it has done wonders for the economy of Georgia. It's great. I mean, and you hear sightings of celebrities every day. You know, you see Dumb and Dumber 2 was being made on the Marietta Square. You know, we actually had, you know, Hunger Games 2 and 3 were filmed. Their office was up the street from us, and they were actually keeping a lot of their extra props in one of the garages in our building. So we would see them coming in and out.
Right.
But the movie industry is just, it's incredible. And you don't really realize how many are being made at one time and how big of impact that has on, you know, hotels and restaurants and transportation, everything.
And the movie tax credits are a good thing for the state of Georgia too. And for us as taxpayers.
Right. Well, that's what kind of really flip the switch to turn all that on.
Tyler Perry is one smart person. He knew he was staying here and he was not moving.
And how many acres did he buy?
A lot.
Hundreds of acres.
Yep. And so you can see that, I mean, just as far as growth, back to you, I think your original question,
right.
It's incredible.
And you could never have anticipated that. You know, 30 years ago, you're like, oh, and then eventually we'll become one of the top cities for movies, and this will go right into your business plan, right?
Absolutely. And it's been very progressive, too, because, you know, I've spent probably the better part of the last 10 years working with planners and groups. I was I'm a past president.
You're active
of
in all the
MPI,
right,
the Meeting Professionals International, which is the Georgia chapter, has over 300 meeting planners just here in the city of Atlanta.
And then the Hospitality Sales and Marketing Association.
Absolutely. Right, HSMAI, SITE is a up and coming organization too.
All right. So for all this technology, that's great. But there's also relationships, trust, fundamental. Absolutely key aspects of your business, just like they have been all 29 years. You're building relationships with these people.
Well, as we look at it, we will always do well as long as I know Stone and Lee.
Well, there you go.
Most companies say that. Yeah. You're not the first.
But, you know,
carve that segment out, will you?
But, you know, you are right. And Steve knows this too. And anyone who's in the business of selling a business or themselves or their technology or their consulting, whatever, it is relationships. That's what sales is. You know, the millennial generation is more into electronics. the old timers generation, even those of us, you know, who are not as old, but really we want to talk to people. You send me an email, I may very well just call you back, because I can also, inside of probably 2 minutes, accomplish more than five emails. You know, now when you're going to Shanghai or, you know, all right, maybe not, you know, when we're
especially
going
12 hours ahead. It was all emails in the middle of the night.
I'm sure that messes up the, you know, good night's sleep. And, but it's true. Relationship building is, any speech I would ever give will have that involved, because, you know, people learn to trust. And if a lot of times it could be a year or 2 years before, 2 years before I know somebody that I do business with, because they don't know me, I don't know them, but we see each other. They start to learn about each other. And over time, after, you know, a certain amount of time, and I'll even tell people, don't use us if you're good with what you have going on right now. But if you ever have a problem, please, you know, let us know. And so a lot of times that problem always seems to occur and we have a chance to, you know, prove ourselves. But then you see people out socially. A lot of the conventions we go to, you know, once you get to know people and they then get to know you, you've made friends for life too. It's not even about all business anymore.
Right.
It's, you know, whether you have a network event at the concourse.
Sure.
Or, you know, people come, they're not worried about the business. They want to see you guys.
Right.
So, you know, it is all about relationships, and without them, you probably won't survive in the business world unless you just have some product that is in demand.
Well, so, if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Our website is www. This is the hook again, right? dot Green, G-R-E-E-N-E, Worldwide Transportation, all spelt out, .com. And we are 24/7 here to serve you, and happy to do anything you need, or as our motto is, we'll do anything you want as long as it's legal.
I like that. It fits nicely on a bumper sticker, probably, too. Huh?
It's a long one.
Well, thanks for coming down and visiting with
us, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's
always fun to get out of the office and come in. You guys are great.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our two guests today, Steve Brummer and Larry Green, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.